Session number 11, 208.
Mr. Eric Hooper, Reel 6. What about the actual training on Cyprus? What sort of training program, when you've got the positions established, what sort of training program
well,
did you embark on?
What we did do, we'd keep ourselves fit. We used to have to do route marches with full marching order as well. And that was pretty hell up because of the heat. But
was it sandy underfoot? Was this way?
Well, it wasn't. It was more or less sand, gravel, and pebbles.
So not easy marching.
Yes, undulating ground. Not easy marching.
How far would you go?
Oh, we'd probably go for about 2.5 miles there and 2.5 miles back.
And was water discipline enforced, or did you practice enforcing?
No, there was plenty water available in Cyprus.
So you didn't practice going without, so to speak.
Well, yes. You on the march, you couldn't touch your water until you were given orders by the officer. Because in actual fact, each man, although he carried a water bottle full of water, that wasn't his water. That water was really emergency water, which was to be used for cooking and what have you. Suppose they were in an area where water wasn't available, wasn't plentiful. That was all called in, and that was used for cooking, and it was dished out accordingly as it was required.
And what other training?
Well, there wasn't a great deal of training going on then. As I say, we just did our...
Do you do any tactical defence attacking
exercise? No, not in Cyprus, no. Yeah. Again, we weren't in Cyprus that particular long because, again, we had another emergency.
Now, while you were on Cyprus, you got a job with Brigade HQ, I understand.
Well, what happened was I went on a course to Brigade Headquarters in Cyprus, training as a liaison officer.
And how were you trained? What was the job you were doing?
Well, we had lectures and on map reading, how to make drawings, of little areas, carrying, writing messages, the same thing which you had in IO, you learned how to write messages and what have you.
And what was the job of the, what would you say the liaison officer's role
well,
was?
The real liaison officer is exactly what it means. You liaise between your battalion headquarters or brigade headquarters and battalions. So that the CEO might say to a liaison officer, go to 9th DLI headquarters and see Colonel Percy and ask him what his intentions are. Right? And he would go there and the colonel would tell him what his intentions were, and then he would come back and tell the brigadier. Or the brigadier would say, go and take this message to 8th DLI or 6th DLI.
Now, were you being trained as... a brigade liaison officer or a battalion liaison officer? Or did they not
well,
have
well,
was it the IO?
The liaison officer actually lived at brigade headquarters.
So they sort of, the intelligence officers were the sort of equivalent at battalion level, were they all?
Well, no. They coordinated information from brigade headquarters, you see. The liaison officer would come from brigade headquarters and say that the 8th DLI are going to make an attack on so-and-so. And the intelligence officer, he would then put it on the battalion map, the China graph. You see, the maps had the cellophane over the top or the polythene, whatever they call it in those days. And he wrote with the China graph exactly what was what.
And did you actually start work as a liaison officer, or were you just trained?
No, I was just trained, and then...
What transport were you meant to use?
Motorbike.
Did you know how to ride one?
Oh, yes, I used to ride motorcycles at home before then. Oh, yes, I was quite at home on a motorbike. And one of the jobs which was very interesting was that you were given certain tasks to go over a certain area in Cyprus and make a note. This is where the map reading came in and drawing came in, where you had to look at areas to see, suppose parachutes dropped, if there was any bridges there that you could blow up to retard their advance, anything like that, or any little hills you could blow up which would block the road. And then you had to make a little a map and give the map reference of that and come back and present that to the brigade headquarters.
Did you enjoy this role? Would you have liked to have?
Well, I more or less did the same thing later on, but not on motorbikes, which I'll probably tell you later on about this. We're just talking about Cyprus at the moment.
Now, you said that another emergency came up.
Well, the emergency was that they got word that they thought that the Germans were going to get through the Caucasus. And so again, we were rushed by train to Famagusta, and from Famagusta over to Haifa.
This was round about November 41.
Yes, yes. Then at Haifa we went to a transit camp. And what we had to do was to we had to wait until we got transport, which was a bit of a higgledy-piggledy transport. It wasn't sort of regimental transport. It was all bits and pieces. In fact, most of the transport belonged to the local inhabitants under contract, and their drivers, they were contracted.
What had happened to your transport?
Well, our transport hadn't really arrived from England as yet. We did have some transport, but not full Italian transport. We weren't at Haifa very long, probably about a week, I should think, week to 10 days. And we did get a bit of local leave, which we were allowed to get into Haifa proper, which was quite nice. We went up Mount Carmel to some of the cafes there and restaurants. I really liked Haifa.
Who were you with now? Did you come back to A Company?
I was still with A Company then. And
you'd finished the course and back.
Oh yes, finished the course and back. Okay. And then we eventually had got all our transport, and away we went up the pipeline, or followed the pipeline from Haifa up to Kirkuk.
What was the journey like?
It was interesting. I mean, you travelled in the lorries during the daytime, and then we'd have a little stop for something to eat, and then we'd carry on what they call a pumping station. There were several of these where we made camp and we stopped there for the night, and at these pumping stations, they were very lucky that there was been a small naffy set up, and you were allowed to buy beer and what have you. And then this is where I mentioned to you earlier on about you had to be careful with the natives because they were doing a lot of stealing. They were coming along from the hills. They were stripping, greasing themselves, rolling themselves in the sand, and then they were coming to these little pumping stations where the troops were spending the night, and stealing their rifles.
These were Iraqi?
The Iraqis, yes. In other words, they were turned by more or less everybody, it's the WOGs. Yes.
What precautions did you take against?
What they were doing, you know, they were coming down and they were making noises like jackals, because there were quite a lot of jackals about the place there. And orders came out that anything on what appeared to be on four legs had to be shot. And then they used to have parties and trucks running up along around the area with headlights on to see if you could see them. You see that? The idea of them getting themselves in grease and putting the sand on it, if they were caught and they started to grapple with anybody, you couldn't hold them, they slid away.
Did they succeed? Did anyone lose their rifles in the ninth?
No.
What about the population generally? As you moved through Iraq, and did you go through Baghdad?
We went to, I tell you what, before we got to, was it back before or afterwards? But anyway, the one particular part we went to, was, we call that, was just outside Habanir, or Habania.
The RAF base.
It was RAF, yes, RAF base. And it was just like a little country village on its own. It had a cinema, a theatre, it had shops, a restaurant, it had bungalows. And it was amazing just to come across us out of the desert. We were allowed in there, I think it was only one day, well, only outside about one day. And there was a lake beside that where they used to have the Sunderland flying boats used to arrive. And then, as regards...
Was there any sign of the... I mean, there'd been trouble between the Iraqi...
Yes, there had been. But we got there after that. We saw, of course, where there'd been little battles, you know, where sort of burnt-out trucks and what have you. But
what about the attitude when you went through Baghdad? How did the civilians respond to you?
Well, when we went through Baghdad, it was more or less straight through Baghdad. No stopping, anything like that. I don't think we had any trouble. I mean, some might have had trouble, but as far as regards our battalion, we didn't have any trouble.
Did you notice, was there any sort of attitude from coming from the civilians? I'm giving trouble, but did they look happy or to see you? Or?
Well, they never really looked happy any time, especially the women, because they all had their yashmaks on and what have you, you know. And of course, you didn't see many of them about.
So you went on from Baghdad.
And we got to Kirkup, and we stopped there for a while, probably about a couple of days or 3 days. And then we went up to a place just outside Mosul. It was between the Lesser Zab and the Greater Zab. Two rivers.
Was that Eski Kelik?
That's the place, yes. Yes.
So you got there in late-ish November?
Late-ish November. And we're under canvas. And then by the time we had got there, the caucus trouble, the Russians had taken over there, and of course we weren't needed. And we were stuck there it might have been about a month, I know. We spent
until February,
it was a long time, I know, but we spent the winter there, and it was terrible. I mean,
what was it like? You were under canvas.
It
was very cold.
It was very, very cold.
What effects did the cold and the weather generally have on life?
Well, it was just pretty miserable. I mean, the snow was that heavy that they had to have fatigue parties going round it during the night time to knock the snow off the tents, otherwise the tents would collapse with the weight of the snow. And the rivers, which were very, very quick flowing rivers, they absolutely froze stiff.
How did you try and keep warm, I mean, in tents?
Well, most of them sort of got themselves a primus stove. And had that burning overnight.
You had enough fuel.
Well, you could buy this fuel from a village not very far from where we were encamped. And it was pretty reasonable then because, you know, they more or less made the stuff there. Remember, it was crude paraffin. It wasn't like the paraffin we have in England, you know, the refined stuff. A lot of smoke from it, but never mind, it kept us warm.
Now, had you been in tropical kit? Did you have...
Well, we also had our, by then we'd had our battle dresses and greatcoats. Oh, yes.
Was there any other methods employed to try and keep warm or keep the troops warm?
Well, again, route marches and exercises, you know, enforced exercising. And each company had been allotted a reasonably sized marquee, which was used as a social tent, you know. But unfortunately, there wasn't much, when I say a social tent, they'd just gotten there if they wanted to do any play cards, anything like that. But I think most of them just stuck to their own tents. I think it was warmer than their own tents and one big marquee.
How did you try and keep the troops amused? Because there's not much for them to do.
Well, as regards entertaining of troops, though, there wasn't much we could do, really. It was too damn cold, you know. I think they were all. It was dark at night, you see, and I think all they wanted to do was, after say 4 o'clock, have their meal and in the kip.
What about food? What rations did you get up there? You're a long way away.
Well, food was all right. Oh yes, we had a good food there.
What kind? Was it the standard army rations?
We did get fresh meat and potatoes and bread and vegetables. Different to what we had in Cyprus at times, when we just had the when we first went there was hardtack, which was the biscuits and bully.
Did you go on any patrols or patrolling while you were there?
Well, you did have, of course, the in Cyprus. You had your sections who are your platoon who was on duty, and their job was to go around, their duty to go around looking after the tents. Well, you were on duty with them as a platoon commander.
But then, when you were between the Zabs?
Between the lesser Zab and greater Zab, yes.
Some of the officers I know went hunting. Did you go hunting?
Oh, yes. Well, excuse me. When weather got to, in the spring, and the snow had gone, then we went hunting, to see if we could get the gazelle. But I think that was more or less relaxation, because I don't think anybody ever got a gazelle. I never mind see one, but they never ever shot one. So what we used to do was to put something up and just have a few rounds shooting at it. Yeah.
Now, you were promoted lieutenant at some point, full
lieutenant,
I suppose.
I was promoted for lieutenant. Between the rivers.
Did that mean any more responsibility? Or
no.
Just
seniority. Just seniority from during war years. Normally that you got the promotion after 18 months as a lieutenant.
So around about February, you were moved again. What happened then?
Oh, in February, well, we got notice that we were going to move into Damascus, and we thought that was grand, that, because Damascus in those days was quite a lively place. But what we did again was the same thing, that we travelled so far by lorry, and then disembarked and marched the last 2 miles into the camp, where an advance party had been sent on to erect cookhouses and what have you. So by the time the men got there was a hot meal waiting for them. And at the last stretch, where we thought we were going into Damascus, we were marching, and then I remember a dispatch rider coming along and giving the colonel a message and diversion to the Western Desert.
That caused some disappointment.
Oh yes, caused some disappointment. And then we...
The CO was still Joss Percy.
Still Colonel Percy. And then we made our way up to the Western Desert. And as I say, it was the same, we did it in stages. We finished up taking over from the 2nd Indian Division. And... I was with them there for about a week when I was sent to brigade headquarters. And
Before we go on, what were the basic... You took over from the 2nd Indian Division, I think you said, in the Gazala. What were the basic positions that you took over? What did they look like?
Well, they were reasonable. I mean, they were. We didn't have to do any more. Well, we did do a certain amount of more digging, but it was what was left by the Indian Division was satisfactory for us. But the brigadier, you know, which I'll come to that later on. He wanted them extended.
Were they on the company? I know that the whole brigade had a box, the Ghazala box. Yeah.
Well, there was a box, but there were, I would say there were boxes within boxes. You see, you had your company positions, which were more or less all round firing, all round defence. Excuse me again. Which was your barbed wire, but
you were barbed wired in.
Yes, and then of course facing west, which was in the direction of the enemy, we had a lot of barbed wire there, and mines had been laid.
Would the battalion, the brigade box was divided into company boxes. Was it divided into battalion boxes as well?
Into battalion boxes, oh yes. Yes.
So it was subdivided each time?
That's right, yes, that's right. Yes.
And how deep were the trenches? What pattern were they? Just
They were just more or less type of slit trenches. They weren't developed in any state like the old First World War trenches.
How deep and wide about when you took over? I know you only stayed 2 weeks. So.
Well, I would say up to about shoulder depth.
So about 5 foot.
Yeah. Then you had sort of a little bit airy behind the slit trenches where you dug a bit deeper. The idea was that when you weren't in the slit trenches, there was an area where you could move about without your head being shown. But the slit trenches, you had to have an area so you could get your head up the fire, you see, and that's where the...
And how wide was a slit trench in the desert?
Well, there were the standard slit trench width. Unfortunately, I couldn't give you the width now, but...
Not very wide.
I reckon about...
3 foot.
2 to 3 foot, yes. Yeah.
And was there any problem with the sides? What was the ground like, in other words?
Well, the ground in parts was very sandy, and other parts were very stony and rocky.
Did that make it difficult to keep the trench to, you know?
I beg your pardon. I thought when you meant when we were digging them. No, what happened was you had to break up those stones and what have you, you know. Well, they had to be broken up.
And how did you prevent the sand falling in? That's another thing.
Well, when I say sandy, it wasn't. Like the sand you had at the beach. It was sort of like a clay sand.
So that the walls maintained themselves, yes. You know. Mm-hmm. Did you have any dugouts for officers' dugouts?
Yes, your platoon commander, he had a dugout.
What was your...
Well, when I say a dugout, actually what it was, you had a hole, a square hole, about 6.5 feet by about 4 feet, and you had little steps down to it, and then you each man in actual fact was issued with a one bivvy between two men. An officer had one bivvy, one officer, and what we did, we didn't use them as bivvies, we lay them straight across the top of the hole, so that protected us from sun and from. But when I say rain, it didn't really protect us from rain. It was there for some sort of protection.
But it wasn't. It wasn't actually underground.
Wasn't it?
You didn't have any overhead cover.
Not like the dugouts you had in the First World War.
So what would you have in this 6.5?
We were allowed to have our camp bed and a wash basin and what have you, you know, bits and pieces.
Would your servant, your batman, would he be in there with you?
No, he lived with the rest of the platoon.
And where would they be? In the slit trench? The...
They'd be in the slit trench. Well, they would be in the area set the back from the slit trench. You see, you had your slit trenches, right? And then you had a sort of a passageway dug to your bigger area. And
how big would that be?
Oh, that would be about... about 9 feet by 12.
So quite a big area.
Quite a big area. Oh, well,
would that be covered over, or would that be
no,
open?
No.
And would the cookhouse and the such like, would they be below
ground?
They
had an area similar to that for the cookhouse.
So everything was below ground?
Everything was below ground, oh yes.
So you moved into this, and then you were sent off, left A company, and sent off to be Staff Lieutenant Camouflage at Brigade HQ.
That's right.
Were you pleased, or would you
rather... I was pleased because, we used to always think anybody who got the Brigade Headquarters was a cushy number to a certain extent. Which, I will say that the conditions were better. You had... We had a joint officers' mess there. Our food was a bit better because what they used to do, they used to send convoys back to Alex. A big convoy was sent about once every 6 weeks. It was run under divisional command, and each battalion sent a 3-tonner, and food was bought for the troops out of what they call the PRI, which, when I say, in other words, what they call the Regimental Institute. There was always a little fund set up for the troops for goodies, and what they used to do was send back and buy fresh eggs and get beer and what have you. And the same thing happened at Brigade Headquarters, but at Brigade Headquarters, we as officers, we had to pay for that extra. But it was worth it, you see, because we had our bacon and eggs for breakfast, and we used to have very good lunches and meals. But again, I said we had to pay for that, for the extras. Although we did get our usual rations from the quartermaster.
What was the what were the brigade position? That was within the Gazala box.
Oh yes.
And what was the setup there? That was underground as well.
Oh, that was underground. What we had, mind you, I would say that the brigadier, he'd had captured a tent, which was one of these German tents, which was camouflaged. And he wouldn't let me camouflage his tent because he said it was already camouflaged, but it wasn't really, because these, you see, tents and buildings and cars and what have you with this funny marking on it, but even battleships, they did have a certain amount of camouflage, but the ships blended better with sea, but not with the desert, because what you get with a tent, irrespective of what colour it is, from a distance, all it is, it's silvery reflection.
He actually had a tent erected. He was one of the few things above
ground. In fact, to be quite honest, one of the first things I did after when I went to Brigade Headquarters, I went to Brook, where I had a course on camouflage. And when I came back, the first thing I did, I thought, oh, well, I'll work on the Brigadier's tent. And I camouflaged that, but he didn't like it. And he had his batman pull it all the bits again. And when I spoke to him afterwards, he said what he mentioned. Oh, well, it's already camouflaged, but of course the Brigadier, I couldn't argue with him.